Back to the old Scoop interview. Start off, your ass and beads. And I was reading somewhere that you used to jump the fence.
Yeah, I was a boarder at St Bede's for a while, and I joined the Labour Party at 14, and some people thought I should have got a life. They might have been right. And they used to close the gate at night, and so you'd have to leap over to go down to Redwood branch meetings, Redwood Labour Party branch meetings. So yeah, that's true.
There was no corporal punishment inflicted?
Oh yeah, there was corporal punishment when I was at school.
But was there any corporal punishment inflicted for your promotion to the Labour Party?
No, I had permission to go to the meetings. You know, I think they were considered pretty harmless.
Now, just, also, there's about four other St Bede's boys in Parliament at the moment.
There's six now.
There's
myself, Damien O'Connor, Peter Dunn, Jerry Brownlee, David Carter and Mark Blumsky.
Good grief.
I'm told, I forgot about Mark, he was St Bede's old boy. So I think we certainly, and the interesting thing about that actually is we haven't all come from one political party or one side of politics, which I think is actually neat, because you've got Peter in the middle, and Labour and National, and I think that what it shows is the school hopefully instilled in us some, an ethic of public service.
Interestingly though, you could say a lot of those politicians are quite centrist, sort of the more moving towards the centre of the Labour Party, also moving perhaps to the left of the National Party. Do you find that odd?
Oh, no, I think the interesting thing about St Bede's is everywhere you go, the local pub right up to the senior levels of public service, there's some very interesting and very senior people who have made it, in life and in their careers, which says something about, the school. It certainly, gave me a wonderful education. I've always been grateful for it.
40 years ago, people would have said it's a papist conspiracy.
I think we've moved on from that.
Okay, now you're a minister at the moment. Are you the second youngest, or are you the youngest in the Labour cabinet?
Nanaia's younger than me.
So you're the second youngest.
I think so. Yeah, I'm 36.
Okay, before that, just a little travel through your parliamentary career. You were commerce chairperson. And then?
No, I chaired finance expenditure.
Right.
I was on finance expenditure in the first term in primary production, and I chaired our finance caucus committee, and then the second term I chaired finance and expenditure and was on primary production.
Okay, well, finance and expenditure, that would probably be about the most robust of the committees.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like it's seen as the most powerful select committee?
Yeah, and it's also the most political. In my time, you had all the hard heads on there. You had Lockwood Smith, I think Bill English at one point. You had Don Brash, John Key, Rodney Hyde, Winston Peters. It was a bit like sort of planning a D-Day landing each week, because it is the most political. It deals with the biggest issues, which are all the economic and money issues. It was a very tough committee to manage. But I think where we broke a bit of ground was we changed a few of the things like time allocation and managing how the committee went. And I think at the end of the day, people felt satisfied and we efficiently went through the business. There was far less grandstanding than there has been in the past with that committee.
So where we come from there is there'd probably be quite a lot of robust debate, and other than in the House as a minister, would you reckon that would be the toughest test of a politician chairing one of those big committees?
Well, yeah, especially, I never had a majority, even with the United Future vote, I still was 50-50. So I had to negotiate and manage to get our business through. And for 3 years we never had a hiccup, and I had a very good team on my side around me. But yeah, it was very, very tough. I think it was the toughest committee chair to transact business, especially, it'd be easier if you had a majority and you could just roll the numbers through.
Now, who did you find was a good debater on that committee, or who do you have the most sort of clashes with in a robust parliamentary way?
Mr. Hyde and myself have been known to knock heads from time to time. Richard Preble replaced him, and I think Richard, these last few months, I think, though we disagreed on a whole host of issues, I think he brought a substantial more amount of gravitas than his predecessor. But equally, when you're dealing with budget issues, everything is debated, everything is worked through in a pretty tough way.
Some people see, parliamentarians from the different parties, that it's sort of getting on and stuff, but Just with Mr. Hyde, I notice you've had a bit of history with Mr. Hyde, and are you one of those people that say Parliament would be the worse off if Mr. Hyde wasn't here? Do you follow that dictum?
I think Parliament would be far better off if Mr. Hyde wasn't here. Mr. Hyde and I had had our clashes, and without getting into, you know, the politics, I think Mr. Hyde's great at giving it out, but he has grave difficulty being held to account himself for his actions and what he sees. And I think people have had a gutsful of... there's a difference between holding a government to account and holding individuals to account and just raking over muck to the point where people's lives are destroyed and reputations are sullied. And I think people have had a gutsful of that. And I think that's probably reflected in Mr. Hyde's huge success in the election of reducing his party to 2 members.
Okay. Although I know that Labor didn't go for tossing him out or attempting to toss him out. They seem to think that he would actually take National to the right.
Oh, look, I'm not involved in that. That's just a decision for the party. I think, you know, people only see Parliament at question time when we're all having a go, and that's a bit of theatrics, and that's part of it. But I think there's a new generation of MPs on both sides where there's an acknowledgement that at the end of the day, Parliament's got to work, we're going to get the business through, so yes, you get up and have your crack. But, you know, there can be some cooperation. I mean, the other committee that I was on was primary production, which probably because of the nature of rural issues, it was the opposite to finance expenditure. It was the most non-political of the committees. And it was quite therapeutic because you'd actually get the business through because there was industries at stake. And I think we did a hell of a lot of productive work on that committee over the 6 years that I was part of it. And that is the engineering of politics.
Speaking of, I mean, having a crack, you've sort of been seen as a bit of a scrapper in the Labour Party. You're willing to go out there in the House and give a bit of a speech, try and cheer it up?
Oh, you're one passionate bloke. I think, again, where people get brassed off as politicians who won't say what they believe. They say what either they think people want to hear, or they speak out to both sides of their mouths. And they go and tell various groups what they want to hear, but they forget that those groups will talk afterwards. And it is a debating chamber. If we were all to sit there and agree and hug each other and say, isn't this wonderful, and sit in concentric circles, then I doubt whether we'd get a lot done, and I doubt whether it's a test of ideas in there. I mean, if you put any group of people in a room and put a proposition to them, I'm sure they'd have a heck of a lot of disagreements because they're testing each other's ideas out. Where I think people... There's a debate. Well, where people draw the line, though, and get sick of Parliament is when there's a continual amount of mud thrown just to grab a headline from certain folk.
A lot of people sort of forget that under the MMP environment that the politicians have come from both National and Labour, and I just found it interesting that did you work with Ron Mark and with Labour?
Yeah, Ron was around in the 1993 period. And he stood, I think, for us against Ruth Richardson.
So has that helped or hindered negotiations with sort of coalitions, the fact that, you both come from the same party?
I can't speak for Ron, but I wasn't actively engaged in the negotiations. That was obviously the leadership. There's professional relationships on all sides. I mean, you can get in the ring and slug it out and then go and have a beer or a cup of tea afterwards and talk, because you have to. At the end of the day, you have to transact the business and get the Parliament working.
So what I'm saying there is, do you see a difference between sort of Ron Mark, he has go in the House, and sort of Rodney Hyde there?
I think there's a difference between everybody and Rodney Hyde.
Right, so he's a special character.
He's a very different specimen in the laboratory, let's put it that way.
Okay, let's move back. You went to the Leaders Development Conference in 2001 in Geneva. What was...
Oh, there's a very eminent organisation called the World Economic Forum, and it was 2000 or 2001. They have what they call the Global Leaders of Tomorrow program, and they select 100 people, I think it is, each year. I think that's the number, as people who they feel have potential, whatever, and invite them to be members of the World Economic Forum, and then you have invitations to attend their annual meeting, which is the very prestigious and famous Davos meeting in Switzerland, where world leaders of all shapes and sizes turn up, and it's a unique organisation, and it's the only organisation really that brings politics, business and NGOs and charitable and social organisations together, and they have a very lofty goal, which was basically, you know, how do we make the world a better place, which sounds a bit of motherhood and apple pie. But you bring all those organisations together, not to scrap each other, but to see what we can do. I mean, J.K. Rowling, I think, was in Select at the same time I was. You've got people like Bill Clinton's an active participant, and most of the world leaders are there, and it was just a privilege to be up close and personal with a number of those people and just listen to them and learn and listen to those ideas. And you always got to ask yourself as an MP, well, what's in it for my constituents? So I get this gone, great. But what's in it for them? And I got appointed to the Free Trade Task Force of the World Economic Forum. And that's enabled me to get linkages up with business people. I mean, Larry Page, the guy who started Google, got the award, and he's in the same class as I am. We know each other. And if you can get those linkages up, then if people need to do business, there's a phone number you can ring, and they might give you 5 minutes of their time. So it's allowed me to extend some networks, and for people around the country, we've been able to help them internationally in this way.
Labour got a bit of stick, for not being business friendly enough, but I just noticed this picture of Mr. Mike Moore there, World Trade Organisation. Did you see yourself as being a sort of camp to push the more business line of Labour?
Well, I think we are business friendly. I think you get defined by people's perceptions of you. I mean, what we did was about $1.4 billion worth of tax breaks for business announced in the last budget, aligning GST with provisional tax, payroll agents, a lot of work done in small business, a lot more work to be done into compliance. But I think we are business friendly, and we've had an economy and contributed to creating an economy which is very business friendly. People are making money, which is neat. Unemployment is low. I'm an ex-business owner. I've learned the lessons of being in business. I understand cash flow. I understand, the best lesson I learned in my life is if you don't work, you don't eat. I get a paycheck once a fortnight. I know that's constant unless I mess up and get booted out. Business people, of course, don't. If they take their eye off the ball of business, then they don't eat. They live and die on what they can do. And that's a very important discipline. I think if you get the opportunity to get it, you should be exposed to it, because it teaches you a hell of a lot. I'm business friendly. I'm centrist sort of bloke. I believe in free markets and free trade, but I also believe in social responsibility and looking after those people who need a hand.
So do you think that this third term Clark Labor government is going to be probably even pushing the business friendly line a bit more?
I think we'll build on the pro business policies that we have, and I think we can do more to engage with business. And for the last 6 years, I've been a member of parliament. I've around the country, and I've done two or three small businesses, large businesses a week, whether they're in my patch or not, just so you can keep in touch, just to drop in and say, what are the problems? Other government departments giving you a hard time, what can we do to help? Because the one thing I've learnt, having worked for a minister and now being one, is if you sit in your ministerial office all day, you're talking to the same group of people, and there's often a huge gap between what officials will tell you in terms of theory and what is practically being implemented on the ground, what's working and what's not. And that's why, better for their constituency MPs, you've got to thumb up all the time and people will tell you what's working and what isn't. You can test out the sort of bureaucratic theories.
So do you reckon Fran O'Sullivan and Roger Kirk and Rhys Deasy are now you're in the ministerial?
You'd have to ask them that, mate. I'll give it 110%. And as I say, it's a hell of a privilege to be given the opportunity. And now what I've got to do is return the compliment. People have placed their faith and trust in me, and I've got to return the compliment and work like hell to meet those expectations. But look, I'm a bloke who keeps my feet on the ground. This will surprise your listeners, but I'm a person, as a politician, who believes MPs do not have a monopoly on all knowledge. Some think they do. I don't think they do. And I think 80% of this job is actually listening. 20% is talking, but you've got to listen to what goes on in the real world, what trials and tribulations people in business or people in their individual lives are having to go through, And then my job is to hopefully contribute to go and solving some of those problems. Very basic.
Just to quickly wrap up, then, when you came into Parliament in 1999-2000, you sort of you had a few organisations a bit of a hard time with the Commerce Select Committee and that. You know, do you think being a minister you're going to be a bit of a poacher turned gamekeeper?
I think that was good experience for me, because in being chair of finance expenditure, you are testing out organisations all the time. And in my associate finance role, that'll be part of the job in terms of SOEs and others. But you've constantly got to be questioning the advice you're getting, because otherwise, and you've got to be going out and testing that advice, because otherwise, how do you know whether it works? Again, officials will tell you one thing that may be completely disconnected to what's happening in the real world.
Don't believe everything a public servant says.
Yeah, and like, you know, you've got to graze quite widely to get advice and opinions, and you need contestable advice. You need to test it out. So if it's advice about business, well, here's a genius thought. Why don't we go and ask some business people what they think, and ensure that what we're trying to do, in a theoretical sense, with wonderful policy advice, won't have perverse results, won't have negative impacts, and will work on the ground. I mean, I'm Minister of Building Issues. You know, I have said to officials, you know, we do have people in the departments who've hammered nails into walls, bolted steel onto concrete, that sort of thing, not just theoreticians. And I'm pleased to say we do have practical people in there, because that's a very practical industry. And we've got to come up with very practical, down-to-earth solutions. So, I won't shrink from asking it and contesting advice. And one thing in this job you learn, there's no such thing as a dumb question.
Just quickly, the other things, the Associate Justice and Associate Immigration. Yes. What sort of roles do you be playing in those areas?
Well, Associate Justice, there were four associates. The Justice Ministers and the Primary Minister, now is the Primary Minister himself, and the delegation letters and the job descriptions, if you like, are still being worked through. Likewise, immigration, although my role in immigration will be similar to Damien Collins and deciding immigration cases, which is a pretty awesome responsibility when you have a significant amount of power in that role. And with that comes, some pretty awesome responsibilities. And in that portfolio, you're never going to please everybody.
So you're not working with Winston Peters at the moment, or the man who wrote The Eve of Destruction. That poor old American. Getting there.
I cannot comment on individual cases. But the associate finance roles are going to be very interesting. And Minister of Statistics, I went down and opened one of their conferences, and they asked me, how did I end up with statistics? And I said, well, it was an awesome battle. But they're a really interesting organisation, because they've got a reasonably low profile, but they're absolutely passionate about what they do. And they collect, a heck of a lot of economic and social data that we need. They're not just sort of pointy-headed people who sit there and chew over numbers all day. If we don't collect the data, what foundation do we have for making solid decisions? And what I've noticed about that crew is they're very, very passionate about what they do. But it's not a sort of stats, no disrespect, it's not sort of a sexy portfolio.
I'll mention that to Brian Pink next time I chat to him.
I've told him.
Thanks for that, Clint. But just one, this isn't John Tamahere's office we're sitting in, is it?
Yeah, it is apparently. I walked in when I was given this office and thought, hang on, I've been here before, and realised, yes, it was John's, yeah. So I don't know if... one of my colleagues said maybe we should nickname the office the Green Mile.
Thank you very much there, Mr. Clint Cosgrove.
Cheers, no problem.
Minister of Building.